If we were to rate marriages on a scale of 1 to 100, and God were to give you a score this morning, and in fact each of us would have received one before we got here from God, however he would have got that to you, we could compare and say, hey, looky here, I'm a 69, and wherever you are, on a scale of 1 to 100, you probably could do that with your own marriage this morning, where it is. And as we talk about moving marriages from 69 to 70 to 80 to 90 to 100 in the sense of quality of marriage, what biblically would be the criteria would be the unity, the oneness. That's the number one thing that Jesus said about marriage, is that they shall be one even as Jesus and the Father are one. And there would be that unity in every area of life so that a husband and wife are functioning as one person. They would be abounding in love one for the other, practicing the kind of love that's in 1 Corinthians 13. And so that would be the place we're working, aiming for. And if we talk about how to move there, where a husband and a wife can be one in unity and in purpose, even as Jesus and the Father are, the primary tool for that is communication. If someone were to say, you know, I've got a great marriage, we never fight. My wife lives in Sierra Leone and I live in Oregon. That would be a fairly easy marriage to maintain in the sense of the absence of conflict. Now, when we describe unity and we say we're going to say a marriage is 100 when it is there's the absence of conflict, that's not unity. That's only part of the picture. There's a proactive kind of unity where there's a unity of purpose and direction, a sense of oneness where two people become one. And the result is that both individuals grow rapidly in their relationship with God because of that unity. One of the things that Jesus says in John chapter 17, it is in an environment of unity where we grow best. Jesus said that we would be perfected in unity, not becoming more unified, but in unity, in the environment of unity. The context of unity is where we will grow rapidly in our relationship with Christ. In the environment that is most important for us as married couples is our marriage, that there be unity there that's not simply the absence of conflict, but a proactive kind of positive oneness that's like the Trinity. And so the key to that is communication. Just putting it simply, the more communication that there is, the more unity there will be. The less communication that there is, the less unity there will be. When we talk about communication, we're talking about good communication, positive communication, not fighting, arguing, yelling, screaming. Even though words are being said, that's not what we're talking about, and I'm sure you understand that. It's being able to talk and relate and communicate information that is vital to unity one with the other. Now, as a couple, what happens is there becomes problems in the communication that stops that from happening. And so the communication often becomes simply the transfer of information so that you could be at the same place at the same time, go to the same church, manage your money. It's sort of what you might call minimal communication so that you can function together because you are a husband and wife, but not the kind of communication that would make you one in spirit or in soul. And that's the kind of communication that is needed, and that's what we're going to talk about this morning. So one in your notes, a key to growing a marriage is lots of good communication. And again, putting it simply, the more good communication there is, the better the marriage will be. The less good communication there is, the worse the marriage will be. And communication is just critically important to unity and oneness in a marriage. Number two, husbands and wives do not understand each other's motives, desires, and needs. Now, this is just the way it is. Men are men and women are women, and we don't understand each other. And if we are going to understand each other, it's going to require communication. And for me to become one with my wife and her to become one with me, where we grow in unity, I need to understand her better and better and better. Now, one of the things that often is said is that I shouldn't have to tell you that. Now, if you have said that, you need to, at some point, when you're by yourself, pray to God and confess that sin. That is a major communication barrier. assuming that the other person will understand something that you haven't said. Now, one of the basic rules is with men and women, if you don't tell it to them, they don't know it. And in fact, if you haven't told it to them 7 times, they don't know it. That's how different men and women are. And it's not just the fact that we're male and female. It's the fact that we've come from different backgrounds, different values. A whole lot of things are different about us. And we don't understand each other's needs. We don't understand each other's motives. We don't understand what makes us happy, what makes us sad, what makes a good day, what makes a bad day. And what we find out from trial and error, you do something and she cries, well, you sort of store that information up. And that's sort of what you might call level one kind of stuff. But if you really want a unity, you're going to have to get way below that kind of information that you discover trial and error by the observation of whether she responds positively or negatively by what you do say or the way you act. And so for you to say to your mate, I shouldn't have to tell you that, is a really unwise thing to say, because if you don't say it, they don't know it, and you need to understand that. Your husband needs to have you explain to him exactly what you need. And husbands and wives need to understand that I need to communicate to my mate my motives, my needs, my frustrations, everything that's inside of me, in the very depths of my being, that nobody knows but me. You need to communicate it and never assume that they know it by observation. Now, women are much better at acquiring information by observation than men are. And it's rarely a man who says, I shouldn't have to tell you that. It's usually the wife that will say that kind of information, because they are considerably more intuitive. Number three, we must be taught by our mate how to make them happy. We are each other's marriage manual. Now, that little phrase, we are each other's marriage manual, I heard that, I don't know who said it, but I heard it someplace just about 6 months after we were married. And it's kind of stuck in my head. I need a marriage manual. I need something that tells me what to do and how to act and what to say and what not to say so that I can make Patty happy. And the will of God is that she be my marriage manual. And the will of God is that I would be her marriage manual. I know what makes me happy. She knows what makes her happy. And a responsibility that I have as a husband is to bring joy into her life by the way I treat her, by the way I act, the things that I do. Now, what I tend to do is to do things for her that make me happy. My favorite gift to give to Patty is a fishing rod. But that's what would make me happy, not her. And so how do I know what would make her happy? Well, I ask her, or she would share that with me. Now, when we expect the other person to find that out on trial and error, then we're really acting in a way that is selfish, in the sense that we want someone to do something that is impossible to do. We need to communicate clearly to the other individual what they do that brings joy into my life, what they do that makes me sad. Now, the problem is that in the process of doing that, often more problems are created than are solved. Because in the process of communicating to what someone else is doing or not doing, creates conflict. And therefore, this whole process of growing and our ability to meet the needs of the other person get short-circuited, because we can't communicate it without creating conflict. And that's what's important. I need to hear from Patty on an ongoing basis what I can do and how I can be a better husband. I need to be able to hear that information. She needs to be able to communicate that information, and vice versa, in such a way that we're continually progressing and moving along every day towards a stronger and a better marriage that has more unity in it. Because I'm hearing and she's hearing those things about me down in the depths of my being that bring joy and happiness into my life and that do the same for her. And so I am her marriage manual for me, and she is my marriage manual. In the sense that I will only know what makes her happy, what she tells me. And I will only know what makes her sad by what she tells me. And that telling, communicating back and forth, is what's critically important for building unity in a marriage. Number four, the problem is that married couples often pick up bad habits of rudeness in communication because of familiarity. And My father was in the Navy for 22 years, and some of you that were in the service may have heard this phrase, and one of the things that he would say that they had as a rule in the military was familiarity breeds contempt. Familiarity breeds contempt. Therefore, there was this official separation between officers and non-officers. I can't remember exact terms that he used there, but there was that distance so that there wouldn't be this contempt or division or strife that would develop between those who were in charge and those who weren't. And he often would say that in reference to us kids and how we would talk and treat him. I a couple of years ago, came up with a plan, and that was to buy each of my kids a cell phone, to pay the bill for it, because that way I could find out what was going on in their life. And I decided it would be cheaper than the long-distance phone calls that we were accruing when they were off to college. And I said, okay, here's the plan. You all get a cell phone, but the rule is you got to call me once a week and tell me what is going on in class, what's going on, and all this kind of stuff. I want to know what's going on in your life. And so they call me, I call them. We can call free between the cell phones, so the idea was it would greatly reduce my phone bill. And so I get the phone, the stack of paper with all the phone calls from all their phones every week. And as I look down and see who they've called, and it's interesting, great thing to do, as I notice that my phone number is not on there a lot. There are a lot of other phone numbers on there. Now, my son Seth has a friend, and she's a female. And as I looked last month at his, I see that he went over the minutes, $24 worth. And as I look and see where that came from, I noticed that the big deal was when he was in Alaska playing basketball with the Multnomah basketball team. And I looked down to the phone numbers that he called when he was in Alaska, and they were all the same. None of them were mine. They were all hers. And one of them was for 45 minutes. Now, I've tried to carry on a conversation with Seth for 5 minutes. And I usually get yep. Nope. Okay. That's kind of, we'll drive, and it's kind of pulling teeth to get any information out of him. Phone conversation with him. I called him last night after their basketball game. I said, "How'd you do?" He said, "Good." I said, "How many points did you score?" 9. "What else?" "That's about it." And the phone conversation lasted 3 minutes. I asked him today, I said, "What do you talk about for 45 minutes?" "Oh, stuff." It sort of stimulated my thinking in regards to Patty and I back before we were married. And what I thought about my opportunities to get together with her. And we spent almost every night in college together doing something, going somewhere. And that was sort of the highlight of my day. Often I would know her schedule. I would wait outside her room and walk to her with her to the next class before I got to my class and was late. Any opportunity to be with her, any opportunity to talk with her, and then you get married. And that goes downhill. The amount of communication diminishes tremendously. And one of the key reasons is because we start picking up bad habits of things that we would say and how we would say it, whether it be tone of voice, facial expression, or even the choice of words, and conflict starts. And one of the things that happens when you begin to fight when you talk is you begin to talk less. And that's the case with most married couples, is their communication compared with what it was before they were married when they were courting is less, when it ought to become more and more and more and more, because you can't have a good marriage without lots of communication. And you can't know information about the other person that's important unless you have lots of communication. But because of our bad habits of saying things and saying words in such a way that it causes communication to break down and conflict results, then there is less and less and less that takes place. This law, familiarity breeds contempt, is a basic principle in marriage. We become so used to each other and so we know each other so well that we don't exercise discipline in how we talk. and how we communicate to people. We will talk to our wife in a way we would never think of talking to a person that we would buy groceries from. We will give considerably more discipline to how we treat somebody in the way of manners and grace to a perfect stranger than we will with the person that we're married to. And it's this basic principle, is that when we become familiar with the person, we become less and less disciplined in how we talk and how we communicate, and then disunity begins to build, and dysfunctionalism begins to be built into our communication, and we don't communicate the way we ought to. Number five, a major key to good communication is to establish rules that both agree to work hard at keeping. Now, the average marriage couple don't have any. And if you play basketball without any rules, it is chaos. If you play a football game with no rules, it is chaos. Anything that goes well in life has rules. I don't know how many of you have driven in a third world country. You couldn't pay me enough money to drive in Vietnam. It appears like there are no rules. And it's just confusing, and it's noisy. Everybody honks their horn, and it's just a chaotic kind of a mess. Driving laws and rules cause things to go well, and people then can get to a place with minimum conflict with other people around them, in the sense of getting to the same place. Now, people who break those rules, if you're driving, they irritate you, because of the fact that they are breaking the rule, and very many people do that, and it creates accidents and conflict and all kinds of problems. And so in your relationship with your husband or your wife, there need to be some established rules of communication that you would both agree to and then remind each other of. And they're not a lot. You can establish whatever ones you want. I'll give you a few basic ones. But they become important kinds of just etiquette kinds of things, in the sense of good manners, that you would practice towards your husband and your wife as you talk and communicate to each other. Number six, here's the first rule. The first and most important rule is never, never speak in anger or even irritation. Now, there's a couple of things you can do to help this. One of the things that you've heard me is that I've made that one of my commitments when I say I love you. So when I say to Patty, I love you, I'm not saying I like her, though I do. I'm saying I'm committed to her, and there are specific commitments every time I say I love you that I'm making. And one of them is I won't get angry at you, no matter what you do, no matter how many times you've done it. And so the time I have to say I love you, 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 to remind me of that is when she locks her keys in her car. Because it's a fairly regular occurrence. Now, the other day she called me, and she was at the post office. This is about 3 days ago, 4 days ago. Sorry, Patty. We should probably establish a rule here about what stories I tell, but I was in my office, and she called, and I drove down to the post office because she'd locked her keys in her car, and when I opened the car door, the keys were not in the car. And then she reached in her pocket, and there they were. She usually put them in her purse, and because they weren't in her purse, she thought she'd locked them in the car, because she locks them in the car fairly often. And so when she discovered the keys were in her pocket all along, I said, I love you. Because anger and irritation in communication is always wrong. The Word of God clearly teaches that the anger of man does not accomplish the righteousness of God. Now, the reason we do that is we learn at a very young age to attempt to manipulate and intimidate people to get our own way. Little kids learn that right off the bat, to use anger, to throw fits, to yell, to scream as a way of getting their way, to get what they want. And it is one of the ultimate expressions of selfishness, is getting angry. And I talk sometimes to different people about getting angry, and they will justify it often on the basis of, well, it's the only way I can get anything done. It's the only way anybody will listen to me. Well, that's because that's the way you train people, by doing that. Anger is not the will of God, and it will never accomplish the will of God, and it will not promote unity in a marriage. It will always damage it. And so when the Bible so clearly commands us not to get angry, it is something that we can do. Now, it will take some work on the part of some because we've established that such an ingrained habit in our life and the way we respond to situations or circumstances or doing it so automatically with irritation or anger, but it is an absolute destroyer of communication. Visiting with somebody the other day, and I said, you need to talk to this person. They said, I don't want to talk to him. I said, well, why don't you want to talk to him? Because they'll just get angry. See, when we get angry at somebody, they shut down. They won't talk to us. They won't communicate near as much to us. Anger is a very, very bad thing for husbands and wives to do, and it is a very, very bad thing for parents to do. Because if you want to shut down kids from talking to you, communicating to you, then you just regularly get angry at them. Now, you can communicate with passion, you can communicate with feeling, but I'm sure you understand the difference between that and anger. Anger always insults, it always intimidates, it never builds, it never blesses, it never enhances unity or communication. And so it needs to be something that every husband would say, I will not get angry at my wife, I won't speak to her in an irritated, angry way, and wives need to do the same. I will not talk to my husband in an angry way. A number of years ago, someone came to see me, and they were upset about something that had taken place in the church, and they sat down and they started talking to me, and it took about 30 seconds before they were quite angry. And I held up my hands, I said, hold it, wait a minute. I said, I really want to talk to you about this problem, but I want you to understand that there's some certain principles that we need to have between you and I, and I'm your pastor, and the Bible commands that you honor me. I'm not going to require that you bow before my feet, but I am going to expect that you would talk to me in a way that is free from anger. And if you can do that, great, we can talk about this thing. If you can't, if you're going to get angry and irritated, then we're going to have to wait to another time to have this conversation. And I'm not sure whether anybody had ever said that to them before, and I think they were in the habit of getting angry at other people in their life. It was a normal way of communicating their frustration about things. And we just picked that habit up. We do it at work, we do it in our family, do it with our kids, with people who cut us off in traffic. We just learn how to communicate in an angry way, to express anger, and the anger of man does not accomplish the righteousness of God. And you, thinking about your own life, thinking about your own behavior, your own communication style, need to ask yourself the question, how am I doing in that area? How is it that I communicate to my wife or to my kids or to others? Is anger something that comes through, irritation something that comes through regularly in my life? And then you need to make a personal goal in that area. Now, I've told this story a lot over the years, but I'll tell it again. Way back when we first started pastoring, it was, I think, the very first counseling session I did. A lady in the church came and she said, I have a problem. She said, I yell at my kids all the time. She had two little kids, and they were really ornery kids, and she just yelled at them, and she'd get very angry, and it bothered her that she did that. And she said, and I said, I really didn't know what to tell her. I was 26, and we had one little kid, and I said, so kind of stalling for time, I said, you know what I'd like you to do this week is just count the number of times you yell at your kids. Take a 3x5 card, put it in the kitchen somewhere, and just every time you yell at them, make a mark. She said, okay. And so she came back the next week, and she gave me the card, and sure enough, she had a problem. I believe she gave me more than one 3x5 card covered with marks. I said, I tell you what, we counted them, and I can't remember now, but we'll say she yelled at her kids 500 times. And it was a big number. I said, let's make a goal. You think you could cut that in half? I'll pray about it, you pray about it, but make a goal. You get to yell at your kids 250 times this week. So make them count. And so she came back the next week, and it was way below even that. So we made another goal, and it only took about four times of coming in before she was yelling at them very little. About once a week she would slip up. But it was just a simple matter of focusing on the problem and making a decision not to do it. And when she did, to confess that to God. That was the thing we talked about the next week. I say, when you get angry, you're sinning. We tend to justify it. Culturally, that's what a lot of people do. You know, one of the worst things about television, especially the sitcoms, is that they glorify this rudeness in communication as humor. And we often pick that up just because culturally that's sort of what our culture has been trained to do through television. And however it's happened in our life, most marriage couples have picked up a lot of bad habits in the way they talk to each other. And the worst one is to get angry or to get irritated. And so if that's a problem you have to right up front in your own mind, in your own heart, say, I'm not going to do that. And as a married couple, you need to decide, this is something that we're going to agree to do, is to not talk in anger or irritation. That one rule alone will change most marriages dramatically. It's eliminating irritation and anger when you talk. Agree to it together as a basic rule. It's like a foul in basketball. That you're not going to do that, and that you're going to remind each other when you break the rule. Second one, number 7. Oh, by the way, when you get angry, one of the things that you should start doing is ask your wife or your husband for forgiveness when you do it. When you say, as a husband or wife, we're not going to do that anymore, and then when you do, say something in irritation or anger that you would confess that to them and say, would you forgive me? I shouldn't treat you that way, speaking to you in anger or irritation. And that's always a good thing to do. And it quickly moves you towards growing in that area, because most of us don't like doing that. The next one, number 7, another basic principle of good manners is do not interrupt. I was talking to a marriage counselor, and I just, you know, he's been doing it for years and years and years. And I said, what, in your opinion, would be sort of a key to improving communication with husbands and wives? And he said, if they communicated in writing. I said, communicated in writing? He said, yeah, if married couples would do all the communicating in writing, it would improve their marriage tremendously. I said, why? He said, because they wouldn't interrupt each other. I said, you can't interrupt somebody when you're reading their letter and you respond back in writing. He said, in my opinion, that is the number one problem in communication with husbands and wives. He says, they never can communicate fully what they want to say because their mate interrupts what they're saying because they either don't agree with it or they don't like it or it irritates them. And so communication doesn't go well because you've got this continual interrupting taking place, which spirals downward rapidly in quality. One of the rules that we've established that is similar to this is not to correct. I tell a lot of stories, fishing stories, hunting stories, stories about kids, various experiences. That's just the way I grew up. Our family did that. And Patty would correct the information. And it might have been the fish that was 12 inches instead of 14 inches, you know, that kind of information. And so we just established this rule. We're not going to do that. Correct the other person while they're talking in the basis of information. Most of it doesn't really matter. But it's just a way of interrupting. We interrupt each other for a variety of reasons. And you can't have good communication with someone when they are interrupting what you're saying regularly. And you can start by saying, let me finish, let me finish, let me finish, but pretty soon you just sort of give up. Now, they did a survey here a number of years ago with men. And they asked the question, what is the biggest problem, barrier, in communicating with your wife? And the answer, and it was number one, I mean, it was way, way, way above number two, was I can never finish a sentence without my wife interrupting me. Now, as they did these surveys, they discovered that the number one problem with men in communication was anger. The number one problem with women in communication was interrupting. Now, both men and women do it. Wives get angry, but it tends to be more of a problem with men. And men interrupt, but it tends to be more of a problem with women. You both do that, but in surveys that they've done with marriages over the years, those are the one and two issues that come up repeatedly. And communication breakdown is anger and the inability or the unwillingness to let the person that's talking finish what they're saying without correcting, changing, defending, justifying, excusing, whatever it is that would cause the interruption to take place. And so just, again, developing the rule that when someone's talking, they don't get interrupted. Some of you have come and talked to me about your marriage, and one of the things that I give you, it's not original with me, a number of people practice, is learn to talk using a salt shaker or a pepper shaker as a symbol of you have the floor. And if you do this on a date or at the table, you can use a coffee cup. When it's sitting in front of you, you're the only one who can talk. And when you're finished, then you push it over to your partner. And you establish the rule that if you don't have it, you don't talk. And so there's a mechanical kind of device that's used to transfer back and forth. I'm talking, okay, you talk. And when I have the cup, you don't interrupt. When you have the cup, I won't interrupt. That's a mechanical sort of thing, but a lot of couples can learn how to develop the discipline of not interrupting when their partner is talking. And it's an important discipline. It is critically important. I don't know if you've ever been with a group of people who talk and visited, about fishing, hunting, what goes on in school with your kids or whatever. And if there's an individual who continually interrupts, pretty soon nobody likes to talk to them. None of us like to be interrupted when we're talking or communicating, and there is rarely anybody who will do it worse than our mate. And as husbands and wives, we need to develop the discipline of not doing that, of not interrupting. And so at some point, you can kind of get together and say, let's establish a couple of rules when we talk, when we communicate. And one of them ought to be that anger is always out of bounds, and we need to work at helping each other not interrupt, because it's a habit that we acquire because of familiarity. And it's something that we wouldn't do to other people that we don't know very well, but we do readily with our wife. Number 8, both partners need to agree not to talk to the other when they are feeling emotional because of personal hurt or offense. Now, this is the old proverb, count to 10 before you speak. It really ought to be like 10,000. The old days, maybe 10 worked. Now, one of the things that I learned about Patty is that she knew this principle. Now, even though I'm not very intuitive, I could usually tell when she was upset. And the reason I could tell she was upset is because she cried. And my wife cries easily, just about most anything. And so I could say, I think there's something problem here. And so I would say, what's wrong? And she would say, nothing is wrong. Now, I'm a little slow, but I could tell that that wasn't true. And so I would put the pressure on her. I'd say, something's wrong. I mean, you're not just crying because it's noon or whatever. I knew I'd done something, but I wasn't exactly sure what it was. And she was upset, and I wanted to know what it was. Now, she knew that if she talked to me right then about what the problem was, is that it would create a problem. Because of the way she was feeling about it, the emotion that she was feeling, that she wouldn't do a good job communicating it. And so after this happening about a million times, I'm a slow learner, she said, I just need a little time before I tell you what's bothering me. And so over time, we figured this out, that we do a much better job communicating about what my needs are, what my hurts are, what my problems are when I do it after I have sort of settled down emotionally and have thought the thing through and have figured out how to say it in a gracious way. And one of the things that I tell people is don't talk on your feet. And it's just a way of saying is that most of the time when you have an issue, something that either one of you has done, said, or whatever that has created as a problem, it's kind of on the move kind of a thing, and you don't want to deal with it right when either one of you are hot or hurt or offended, because you will communicate in a way that is going to offend the other individual. We don't do well with self-control when we're emotional, men or women. And so it's a good thing to separate the offense, the event, the hurt with some space, some time, so then it can be talked about and dealt with objectively without the emotion and without the intimidation and the anger and the defensiveness and all the other stuff that comes into play. Again, it's a simple rule. but it's a good one. Don't communicate, don't talk about issues or problems, whether they be things that you've done with each other, something that's over here in regards to the kids or how to manage your money, when you're feeling passionate about it, because you will communicate poorly in the sense of you will offend the other person. And instead of building unity, you create disunity. So just give it some time. Sometimes it just takes an hour, sometimes it takes a couple of days before you communicate about an issue or a problem. Number 9, in your effort to make a point, never insult, attack the other's character or motive or use dysfunctional statements. Now, we all tend to be debaters. We're trying to get our point across. And so in doing so, we develop certain techniques. Now, you understand a dysfunctional statement. That's when you say always, never. You always do that. You never do this. Those statements aren't true. And you're trying to make a point, and in trying to make a point, you hurt or offend the other individual. One of the, we went to a seminar a number of years ago. I went in a group from us, and I went to a workshop on pastor-staff relationships. We didn't have a lot of staff back then. I think Ms. Krause was it, but I decided someday I will. And so I should learn some principles. And they had a large staff. I think their staff at the time was larger than our church back then. They had a staff like 50 people. And he said they had a rule, and the rule was this. They would signal this. That is, they dealt with the problem, not with the person. And the problem is out here, and you can discuss the issue or the problem without attacking the person. The moment you begin to attack the person, you say something about their motive, their character, then communication is going to go downhill rapidly. And so it's thinking through things so that you say things is going to deal with the issue and is not going to attack the person. And in the church, with people in the church, in dealing ministry-wise, different individuals in the church, people dealing with me or with staff, that happens regularly. As individuals will attack the person rather than the issue. And we do that because we're trying to get our way. We do that because we're trying to make our point. We do that because we want somebody to change what they're doing, and we think that by insulting them that will cause that to happen, but it doesn't. It never does. It actually cements that individual's behavior rather than causes it to change. And so it's thinking how you talk to people. And as you're communicating what it is that makes you happy, as you communicate what makes you sad, you deal with the issue, you don't attack the person's character. You don't insult them, you don't hurt them. You don't judge their motives or their intent. You deal with what they said, how they acted, the choice that they made, but you don't say that they did that because they're always thinking of themselves or those kinds of statements. You solve problems. And you deal with the issues, and you don't attack character. And but we, again, it's a habit we pick up regularly. And saying things like, you always do this, or you never do that. You're so selfish, you're so self-centered. Making those kinds of statements in order to make our point. And it doesn't solve the problem, and it doesn't create unity in the marriage, and communication will go downhill as a result of those kinds of statements. And so don't make insulting statements. Don't make and say dysfunctional statements. Number 10, learn to communicate to your mate about their faults and feeling statements versus right and wrong. And by that, I'm saying, what you did made me feel sad. What you did made me feel unappreciated. That's not debatable. What I feel by what you did, that's a fact. Now, what they did was right or wrong is not the issue. The issue is because of the way I am, all my weirdness and everything, certain things make me feel bad. And that's what this marriage manual thing is about, is discovering who I am, discovering who Patty is, and discovering certain things make her feel good, certain things make her feel bad. It may not make any sense to me. But that's not the issue. And so when we try to make sense out of it, and we try to say, well, that's not logical. That's not the issue. See, what makes us feel certain ways is the way we are. We've been brought up that way, and we rarely will change that. There's not, that's just not going to change. Some of you read the book Five Love Languages. It's how we feel loved. You know, some people by gifts, some by touch, some by words. There's these various things. That's the way we are. That's not going to change. And so certain things make me feel really good. Other things make me feel really bad. Now, neither one may be logical, and it may not be what makes you feel bad or what makes you feel good. That's not the issue. That's not the point. The fact is there are certain things that do make me feel bad. Certain things do make me feel good. And so instead of dealing with what the person did on the basis of logic or right and wrongness, deal with it on the basis of this is how I feel. And I'm much more responsive to Patty when she says things that way, when she says, you did this and it made me feel this way. Now, when she puts it that way, it doesn't attack my character, it doesn't attack my motive. She's simply communicating information that I didn't know. Now, I don't want to make her feel bad. Now, if she would say what I did was stupid, I would do it 100 times more. But when she says what you did, nothing wrong with it, but it made me feel unappreciated, then it makes me feel badly, and I want to change that. So as you communicate, as your marriage manual, as the marriage manual for your mate, you need to communicate in what it does to you. See, the key issue in helping each other communicate well is your inner sense of joy, your inner sense of well-being, that feeling of happiness and unity in your relationship. And so when you say something that damages that, you communicate it in that way. This is how I felt on the basis of what you said. You said this and it made me feel so good. It made me feel so appreciated. Oh, okay, I'll say that again. I'm no dummy. Or I said that and it made her feel so unappreciated. One that I think used as an illustration before I came home from a trip, was gone on a missions trip for a couple of weeks, and before I left I gave some assignments to the kids, some chores to do, and which I almost always do. Now they're all gone, so the only one I can give chores to is Sally. At the time, there were a number of kids home. So when I drove in after having been gone for 2 weeks, I mean, as I drove in the driveway, I had this list in my mind, and I checked them off, and I had them almost all checked off before I got out of the car, and I don't think anything on my list was done. And so I walked in the house, and my first words out of my mouth to Patty is, why didn't the kids do the things I asked them to do? It was like, it's your fault, you're the mother, I was gone. Did you just let them goof off the whole time I was? I didn't say all that, but I sort of implied it in the statement. And she didn't say anything, but later, I don't remember if it was the next day, she took me by the hand and she said, come with me, and she led me into the bedroom, and I sort of got excited, sit down here, and I sat down, and she says, I want to talk to you for a minute. And she said, you remember when you came home and you said this? I said, yeah. She said, you know, you haven't seen me for 2 weeks. And what would have really been nice is if you'd said to me, oh, it's so good to see you, and notice something that did get done, and then later dealt with the things that didn't get done. And by doing it the way you did, you made me feel so unappreciated. I don't remember exactly the words, but she used that feeling word. And the way she communicated it made me feel like dirt. Not in a bad way, but in a way, oh. I mean, I could see clearly, because when she said, this is how I felt, I could understand exactly what she was saying, and I knew exactly what I'd done. And now when I drive in the driveway and I see all the things that are not done, I can say, okay, tomorrow we're going to have a talk about those things. But today, I'm going to say it in a different way. Now, I learned that because Patty gave some space or time. She didn't communicate when she was hurt. Because if she had them, she probably would have done it in a way that would have been offensive, and I would have retaliated, and it would have gone downhill. We wouldn't have said anything for 2 days after that. But instead, she gave some time, and then she talked to me in a gracious way, and she did it in feeling words. This is what you did. This is how it made me feel. So she didn't attack my motives or my character. She simply said, there's a better way to do this, what it does for me in my feelings. Number 11, work very hard at making your communication style as gracious as possible. Now, this is like learning to play the piano. when you're taking piano lessons and you play a wrong note. Now, if the piano teacher hears you, they say, you played the wrong note, and you play it right. And you practice, and you practice, and you practice, and pretty soon you develop an ear where you can hear when you play the wrong note. And it doesn't take much, even for little kids, to get to the point where they can play a song and they know when they hit the wrong note, not because mechanically they see it, but because they can hear it. It doesn't sound right. And so to become a person who communicates with grace requires practice like playing the piano or playing the guitar or learning to do anything in life. It's just a skill that we acquire through repetition, and we begin to change the way we talk on the basis of what sounds good. And graciousness in speech is an absolute essential in a relationship with another person, where we will just speak graciously the way the Bible commands. The key verse, all of you are aware of it, is Ephesians 4:29. Let no unwholesome word. Now, the word no is absolutely none. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only. Now, Paul is communicating here in fairly black and white terms. He doesn't say mostly. He says, no unwholesome words, and only such a word as is good for edification. Edification means it builds the other person up. It builds the other person up. Only words that are good for edification according to the need of the moment, that is circumstantially in the situation it fits. You're thinking about timing. You're thinking about location. You're thinking about circumstances according to the need of the moment. In other words, you're becoming wise in when you say things and how you say things. And you learn that you need to give it an hour, you need to give it a day, or you need to say it in the morning, or you need to say it in the evening, according to the need of the moment in the sense of timing, that it may give grace to those who hear, that it may give grace. We have the power to give grace to each other. That's God's grace. That's the word charis, it's power. And we do that by the way we speak. And so this is an absolute verse. Let no, absolutely none, unwholesome words proceed out of your mouth. Now, if married couples would obey this verse alone in the Bible, their marriage would become 100. Unity would become very, very normal in marriages if couples would just obey this one verse alone. Let no unwholesome word proceed out of your mouth. Absolutely none. And when someone does, then you have broken the word of God, the principle of God's word, and negative consequences will come as a result of that. Proverbs 10:32, the lips of the righteous bring forth what is acceptable. Now, this is sort of like a cooking verse. The word bring forth. It's the idea of an artist painting a picture, a cook preparing a meal. The lips of the righteous bring forth what is palatable, what tastes good, what is easily received. And that means it takes a little bit of thinking. If a person is going to cook a nice meal for the person they love, they put some thought into what it is they like. They put some thought into, you know, the decorations and the presentation and all of that that's involved. And they do that because they want to impress the person that they love. And doing the same thing with our words, bring forth. That there's some thinking and some meditation and some planning that goes into that, what is acceptable. Visiting with an individual from another church, and they were frustrated with their pastor. And he said, every time I talk to my pastor, he gets upset at me. And I read this verse to him. I said, think back for a minute on how you present what your frustrations are. Do you do it in a way that is acceptable in the sense that it is palatable? I said, you have a responsibility when you're going to communicate information about things that frustrate you. You don't just come in and dump it. You consider the other person, you consider their emotional needs, you consider their worth and value as a person, and you esteem them and honor them, and you pick your words carefully. You present your petition in a gracious way that makes it acceptable. And if they don't accept it, it may very well be your problem, not theirs. And as a husband and as a wife, we need to do that with our mate in the sense of presenting and talking to each other, is that we make our words presentable. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. What we do with our mouth damages our marriage. The way we talk to our husband, the way we talk to our wife, damages their worth and their value, instead of builds them And again, we learn to do that, and we develop bad habits in that, and we just need to undo that and learn how to be gracious, exercising discipline, even the way we would learning to play the piano. Proverbs 18:6, a fool's lips bring strife. I'll jump right over that one. Proverbs 12:18, there is one who speaks rashly, that is, without thinking, like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Proverbs 15:4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. Crushes the spirit. And that's what we often do to our wife or our husband, is we crush their spirit. And in fact, Patty uses that phrase when she talks to me about how she feels. She will say that, you hurt my spirit. And it communicates to me. I understand what that means, because I understand how I feel when that happens to me. Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Sweet to the soul, that inner person, and healing to the bones. Proverbs 23:16, my inmost being will rejoice, my inmost being. And again, when we talk about unity, that's what we're talking about. My spirit and Patty's spirit, my soul and her soul. We communicate as we develop communication style, not just a head-to-head, but to soul to soul, spirit to spirit. And we learn that certain things crush a person's spirit, and other things build that. My inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak what is right. And when I speak what is right, Patty's inmost being will rejoice. When she speaks what is right, my inmost being will rejoice. And that's what we want to do in our marriages, is cause one another's inmost being, our soul, our spirit, to rejoice, to be full of joy and happiness. And we do that primarily by what we say and how we speak. Proverbs 25:11, like apples of gold and settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Again, the issue of circumstances and timing is one that is regularly brought up in the book of Proverbs. Like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold is a wise reprover to a listening ear. And so communication, as we talk about what makes me happy, often will be in the form of reproof, because it will be correction. But when we do that with wisdom, then the person learns and grows from it, and our relationship becomes more unified, because we eliminate the things that hurt the other person. Because I communicate to Patty, she communicates to me, this is what how I felt on the basis of what you said or what you did, and vice versa. And so we begin to eliminate those things from our life, and then our unity as a husband and wife grows stronger and stronger and stronger. And the last one in your notes, number 12, date often. And again, when you compare courting with marriage, one of the things that often gets eliminated is the dating. That is where it's a special event. Just the two of you. Date often and use them as key communication times that are positive. If you haven't made goals in regards to your marriage, that's a good one to make. To agree together to go on a date every 2 weeks. And if you have trouble with the interrupting thing, sit across from each other, use the salt shaker. Until you develop that discipline of not interrupting. One of the advantages of going to a restaurant, I tell people, is you tend not to yell and scream as much. Good place to start that discipline. Okay, let's pray. Father, thank you for the privilege of knowing you. We do pray your blessing on our marriages. Ask that you would fill us with wisdom from your spirit to speak and to say the right words. Lord, words are so critically important. And I pray that each of us would grow so we can speak only wholesome words, only words that edify, that give grace. Help us to do that. We love you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.